And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, this was a week of big changes in the world. Queen Elizabeth died after 70 years on the throne. Most everybody in the world paid tribute to her for being a sample of steadfastness and devotion to duty, but not Donald Trump. Donald Trump said, a beautiful queen. You know, if Bolsonaro died or Putin died or Orban died or, you know, one of these people that he liked, would he have said, a handsome president? This guy is a sexist every day of the week, every minute of every day. He can't escape it. No woman, apparently, has any reason to expect any respect from that guy. He just can't do it. He just sees the world as divided into real people, white men, and everybody else. And here he was trying to be nice. Go ahead.
Well, I don't, you know, he went over to visit the queen, and I don't think she was particularly happy to sit there with him. You know, it was the difference between class and crass.
Yeah.
On that. But in many respects, doesn't he represent what the Republican Party has been and has certainly become?
Trump.
Trump, you know, in terms of women.
Oh, absolutely. I think absolutely. After all, they promote women only if the women promote unequal rights, subordination for women. Those sure. type of women they promote. No other type of women.
Yeah, that's... And unfortunately, there's enough of them that go along with that.
In every society, there's always people who are prepared to accept a lesser status. Why? I don't know. Is it psychological? Is it ideological? It's either one. But the point is, you can always find some anti-Semitic Jew somewhere, right?
Yeah.
An anti-Catholic Catholic, an Irish hating Irish person, and so forth. They're there. Yeah, they're there.
Well, you know,
people accept the point of view of their oppressors.
Yeah, we have this movement in the country. You get to anti-Semitism about Christian nationalism, which inherently puts people into lesser status. They said that this country is made to be have Christian and, as we alluded to, white Christian males in the area of domination and everybody else to be subservient to that and to be happy about it.
That is how the country was formed. I mean, the first Constitution, the one that the right wing is always saying you got to follow the letter of this first Constitution, was written by slaveholders to defend slavery. That was the whole point of the damn Constitution. That was what they were mad at the British about, for the most part, that they were afraid that their slave wealth, which was the main wealth of the country at the time, was going to be somehow disturbed. That was the point of their revolution.
Well, that was a big part in the South. In the North, you had...
But the South had half the population.
Yeah, well, you had the trade, the New England merchant class.
Yeah.
Which was not happy about the things. You know, the Boston Tea Party wasn't over slavery.
No. It's not until you get to the 14th, 15th, and 16th Amendment, which many historians call the Second Constitution, that you get to the Constitution that most Americans think of as the Constitution. Equal rights.
Yeah. But even that speaking as a lawyer, I was very slow to evolve because you still had the Jim Crow parts that really neutered much of that part of the Constitution. And the Supreme Court has chosen over the many decades to incorporate the rights under the Bill of Rights to apply it to the states under the 14th Amendment only individually and not as a as an entirety.
Which is single. Why, really, you can't, it's not right to think that the courts, any courts, all the courts as a group, are your ultimate defense. Your ultimate defense really is political, which means convincing the mass of the people where their right. true interest lies. That's what yeah. politics is for. That's what politics is about.
Yeah.
Law is merely, to me, the congealed political sense of the community. So if you haven't changed the political sense of the community, law will always be the expression of the most reactionary elements of the community. Doesn't matter what the law is written to say, it's how it's interpreted and how it's applied.
But getting back to your original point, you know, the two people that that it's political that seem to have understood this the best on the Democratic side was Howard Dean, mm-hmm. who wanted to, you know, organize a 50-state strategy, you fight mm-hmm. everywhere. Mm-hmm. And by the way, John Fetterman has done that mm-hmm. in Pennsylvania. If you see his yard signs and his placards, it says every county, every vote.
Right, right.
He gets that. He gets that. Ironically, on the Republican side, the one that gets it the most, or at least has been applying it the most, is Steve Bannon. He goes on his podcast, and he's out there every day saying, look, we've got to take over this process from the bottom up. He tells people, run for school board, run for council, run for the offices in the party, and we're going to take this thing over. And
well, Bannon, who's a fascist, actually understands the political system, and he actually understands how to organize. He's not able to do it. His success comes only if he's successful in lying. And he requires a master liar in order to get across what he wants to do, because what he really stands for is so contrary to what most people's interests are that once people realize what he stands for, they won't go along with it. But if he can have some puppet that is a charismatic speaker and who can divert people, then he can do what he wants to do, which is take the thing over from the bottom up. And but that's what he's doing. That's the great value of Donald Trump to a guy like Bannon. Of course, Trump right. is good at diverting people, or at least diverting some people, from what their true interests are by getting them hepped up on racism.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. And it's been a successful ploy.
Yeah.
It worked for the
Southern racists in the South of, you know, from 1870 to 1960.
Right. Well, it worked for McCarthyism. If yeah. you remember that speech by Margaret J. Smith warning that she didn't want her political party to become the place for racists and bigots and you know, fear mongers.
Right. Well, she needed to talk to Richard Nixon.
Well, Nixon was a lot more subtle about it than...
No, but Nixon was the guy who really took the Southern strategy and made it work.
Yep.
Took the racists from the Democrats, stole them from the Democrats, put them into the Republicans.
Yep. You know, periodically we talk about books that we think are important to understanding things. And, you know, we've talked about Democracy in Chains by... McLean.
Mm-hmm. Nancy McLean. Right.
Nancy McLean. And I keep talking about Ruth Ben Gyat's book mm-hmm. About strongmen. Mm-hmm. It helps you understand the fascism. Mm-hmm. She's an interesting lady. She's half Scotch and half Yemeni Israeli Jew. It's quite a combination. But she's been promoting this new book, and I listened to part of her program that she comes out every week on, by a lady named Ann Nelson. It's called Shadow Network. And
Ann Nelson.
And it's really kind of interesting. For years, when I give what I call my stump speech to the trial lawyers and track all this, going back to the Lewis Powell memo, I say that one of the things I say was Hillary Clinton was wrong when she said it was a vast right-wing conspiracy. I keep saying it was a vast right-wing infrastructure. And I'm modifying my thoughts slightly because I think it's both a infrastructure and it's become also a conspiracy. They've tried to hide this and go underground with a lot of it. Ann Nelson talks about, and again, it followed in the Lewis Powell mode because they formed this Council for National Policy back in the early 1980s. You know, it's another one of these think tank type of organizations that got funded by billionaires, by the Koch brothers and the DeVosses and those folks. And the whole Bannon was a part of that. But the whole purpose of this was to really be the coordinating hub of all these other organizations that are out there trying to prevent democracy from taking hold, or at least doing things that the majority of the people didn't want to be done, to have these policies. And it's really an interesting type of thing. And we're seeing now how it's branched out and how it's kind of evolved into things. You know, the DeVosses, of course, have been the leaders in trying to dismantle the public school system. That's been one of the objectives. And that's pretty insidious because if you control people's education and you control what they learn, or if you keep them more ignorant, then you've got a better situation for the few rather than the many. But also, there's the money that's involved in the public education system that they want to get their hands on. Doug Mastriano, our gubernatorial nominee, is out there with a plan that would just absolutely destroy the public school system. He would have cut by one half the amount of money that the state provides for schooling. And, of course, that would just mean that there's just not enough in the public schools to fund them. You're not going to attract teachers. You're not going to have all these other things. And by the way, again this week, a bipartisan group of office holders around the state came out and they criticized. They wrote a letter, I think there were 70 of them, Republicans and Democrats alike, saying that the Mastriano plan is unworkable on these things. But the other thing that's happened with this group is that they've hitched their star to the religious fundamentalism on things. And this is where it gets interesting. You know, we've had the so-called moral majority, who a lot of people think are neither moral nor a majority. Those type of people with the and being funded and fueled, and then they making a common cause with the group that they once really didn't like, and that's Catholics. You know, there was always an anti-Catholic sentiment in this country, dating back to the large immigration that took place in the middle of the 19th century, and now they're evolving into the newly emerging Pentecostals. And you know, using that for political power. And then you have the Opus Dei folks who are essentially running the Supreme Court now.
Opus Dei is an old line, horrible organization of the connected with the right wing of the Catholic hierarchy.
Going back to Franco and Pinochet.
Yeah.
And those folks. And they, with what Nelson has said, And I heard her briefly. I'm going to have another session listening to her again this week, is that the Republicans in putting all this together, and the billionaires putting all this together, it wasn't a matter of funding so much. The Democrats had a lot of money too, but the Republicans knew were much more strategic in where they did things, and they built from the bottom up. The Democrats tended to try to build from the top down, you know, capture the presidency was always their goal. And we've seen what's happened in all these various states now, and it's very hard to undo the harm that's been done. We talked many times about North Carolina with Art Pope being able to take over the legislature and how the legislature fights the will of the people. Ohio, they're fighting the will of people. You know, and, Michigan, we've talked about in recent weeks that they had, 800,000 people signed a petition to put a vote to have a ballot measure protecting abortion rights. And the commission there that certifies elections split 2-2, and they wouldn't approve it. Fortunately, the Michigan Supreme Court this week came out and said, no, it's going on the ballot. And, right. Yeah. and that's a typical example, because what happened when Roe v. Wade was overturned, what we found out is the polling was that people didn't want it overturned. And the Republican line is, well, we really didn't overturn it. We just put it back to the states where, you know, a woman's rights depend on which state she's in. And, you know,
an interesting concept of rights.
The states
a geographically determined concept of right.
Yeah. Which was, you know, the rights of the blacks, too, you know, depending on what state you were in. Right.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
But what we've seen is all of a sudden the Republicans are running away from the abortion issue. They said, oh, no, we'll have the states decide. Well, here was a state that they wanted to decide it. And all of a sudden the Republicans said, no, you can't. It didn't work out for them ultimately. And it's going to go on the ballot, and it probably makes a difference. And the thing I've been hearing from Democratic strategists is excuse me, that the that there is a lot more backlash or energizing of women, particularly young women, when the Alito decision finally became the law. And they're seeing a lot more women registering to vote and younger women registering to vote. Now, of course, that has to translate into voting the right way.
Right.
And, of course, the Republicans are really good at muddling the waters, on that issue. And even on other issues like Social Security, where Rick Scott wants to do away with it in 5 years. You get guys like Jim Bognet saying, no, I'm going to protect Social Security. And what he means is I'm going to vote for a different system that I'm going to tell people it's going to protect it, but it's not.
Right. So it's like the word reform. Yeah. I'm going to reform it, meaning I'm going to get rid of it.
Yeah. After it's gone, you tell people it wasn't a good system to start with.
Right, right.
It's only worked for, 80 years?
Yeah. It only lifted old people from poverty out of poverty. Until the Social Security, poverty in America meant old age in America meant poverty. The Social Security ended that.
Yeah, and it's like Medicare, when they added that to it, it meant that not only the people, you know, they not only lifted out of poverty, but they had better lives for longer periods. It increased their life expectancy and the quality of life in their older years.
And you'll notice, of course, that the life expectancy in America has fallen by a full year in the last 4 years. This is a failing civilization, if you judge the successive civilizations by the ability to make people live, to let people live, which is how anthropologists do measure the success of civilizations. By that standard, this American civilization is a failure.
Well, COVID had a lot to do with it, but then you look at...
Apart from COVID. But COVID is... But after all, the way the country handled COVID is part of the country.
Yes. And, you know, and to see the way the Republicans discouraged people from protecting themselves.
Right.
And right. turned it... And there you go again. They turned it into an issue of what they call personal liberty or freedom instead of an issue of public health. Instead of the collective good, they turn it into the selfish good.
Because that's their outlook. There is no collective good. There is only, the struggle of each against all. These are barbarians. These people are the supporters of a barbarian approach to life. They want to go back to the jungle. Even in the jungle, there are animals that cooperate with each other. But the specific quality of human existence is you can't be human outside of society. It's society that creates humanity. The one against all and all against all doesn't work for humans. When that dominates, humans can't live and don't live. Humans arose in the teeth of that and surmounting that. We are not biologically determined. We are socially determined. That's just the way it is. You may not like it, but that's how it is. That's where you got born.
Yeah, they're always extolling the stories of someone who's, risen up against the odds, but they never talk about how many people have failed because the odds were stacked against them.
And even if you rose up against the odds, you didn't invent the language that you were using. You didn't build the roads that you were working, right. walking, or driving on. You didn't even create the pencil that you were writing with. All of that was done by an internationally based economy, meaning the cooperation of thousands and thousands of people each step of the way. Whether it was to develop the coal that had to drive the power, that had to allowed you to chop up the wood, that enabled you to press the wood together, the shavings together to form the pencil. Everything, every little thing in life and every big thing in life is done by society as a whole. And it's against that background that the individual is able to develop his or her potential. But without that background, you don't have a potential.
No. Well, that was the struggle of Hillary Clinton. It takes a village approach. And only, as you described it, writ large. It takes more than a village. It takes, international.
That's right. That's right. And that's, by the way, that's the strength of the economy, that it is able to integrate the whole world. You don't have to do everything in every country. With trade, you can do what you can do best, and they can do what they can do best. But when the economy is subjected to short-term private gain, you can't do that.
Well, the perfect example, I think, is what happened with the computer chip industry, where it all went offshore because each individual company deemed it was in their best interest to do that. They could get cheaper
labor. And it was in their best interest. They weren't wrong. They were correct. It just wasn't in society's best interest.
Yeah, or it was in society's as long as no glitch occurred.
But there's no such thing as no glitch.
Right. And then because they would be, inevitably there would be a glitch occurring.
Exactly.
And now we're bringing these things back because public policy.
Maybe.
Well, Biden went out to Ohio this week and helped the groundbreaking for a factory.
Right. But now you get back to what you were talking about 2 minutes ago, which is let's assume they build this factory. Now they got to get workers for the factory. Workers can't work in the factory without a certain level of education, which they're not going to get if the Republicans cut money for education.
We're back to that.
Exactly. The society is integrated. The economy is integrated.
But I want to just remember, but the contrast is, If you recall, Trump made a big deal about Foxconn building a factory in Wisconsin.
Yeah, which they never did.
Which they never did. And the contract never said that they were obliged to. But what he wanted, as a great con man and a great PR guy, was he always wants the headline, knowing that 90% of the story is in the headline.
Right.
And the first paragraph of a story. And the details are wholly different. You know, when he was trying to extort the president of Ukraine to investigate Joe Biden, he said, you don't really have to investigate him. You just have to say you're investigating him.
Right.
When he was trying to overturn the election results in Georgia, he wanted Jeffrey Clark's letter to go out saying that there were irregularities that needed investigating. He didn't care whether it was investigated or not. He just wanted...
In fact, he told Jeffrey Rosen, just leave it to me. All you got to do is issue the letter. Leave the rest to me.
Right. That kind of thing. And they played the same game with Benghazi. You know, they had all the spectacular headlines, but they never found anything.
But there was nothing to find.
But there wasn't there. And, but the people keep, you know, they fall for that because, again, it's the glitzy stuff rather than the more mundane and hard, hardworking stuff that follows that really matters. It really matters.
Well, it's like that story about the fellow in the middle of the night. He's on his hands and knees on First Avenue, and some guy comes up to him and says, what are you doing? He says, I'm looking for my watch. He says, oh, really? Let me help you. Where'd you lose it? On Fourth Avenue. He says, Fourth Avenue? He says, but you're on First Avenue. He says, yeah, the light's better.
Yeah,
that's the whole point. Wherever the light's better, that's where you go, even though there's nothing to find.
Nothing to find. Well, they certainly found a lot at Mar-a-Lago.
Yep.
And there may be more to find. Trump finally got one of his judicial appointees to do his dirty work for him. But even that's being challenged tremendously.
By the way, you notice that they had to suggest people to be the special master. And right. The Republicans came up with two, the Trump people came up with two nominees, one of whom is married to a judge on the 11th Circuit. The 11th Circuit is the court of appeals for this particular case.
Right. Conflicts of interest.
I mean, these guys never stop.
No.
Never stop. Anyway, let me again say, Ann Nelson's book is called Shadow Network, Media, Money, and the Secret Hub of the Radical Right. Ann Nelson, if you're listening and you want to get educated, read the book.
Yep, that's, and if you haven't read Democracy in Chains or Strong Men, do so as well.
Yep. All right, we're done for this week.
Yep, we'll see what happens next week.
Things will happen next week. Things are going to happen because, at least in regard to Trump and Bannon, those things are going to happen.
Yep, the Queen is done. The world will go on, as it always has.
Yep.
And we'll go on.
And we'll go on. So I'll see you next week.
I'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week. Same time, same place.